Hello, welcome to Choose Wisely. I'm Caroline Nelson, and today we've got a Patreon exclusive episode where I'm going to tell the story of my baby's birth, Morgan's home birth. If you're wondering why, we're going to talk about that on a podcast about food. I guess the short answer is, it's my party. And I did encounter a very similar feeling, I would say, in my experience with the medical system, as I get when I interact with big food. It was interesting. And so this is a story of how we chose to circumvent. Before I get into the story and exactly how everything went and how we arrived where we did at the decision to do a home birth, if you hear any piglet noises, I've got Morgan on me right now in the baby carrier, so we'll see how long he lasts. And also, I want to say that in telling this story, I am not advocating for anything. I'm not trying to influence anyone to do anything. Everyone remember that, yeah, we can hear other people's stories, and it's not me trying to tell you what to do, or I'm speaking really narrowly from my own experience. And I just was not someone that thought that home birth was ever something I would want or would pursue. And I felt that way all the way up through like the 7th month of pregnancy. So I'm like the last person who thought I would do that. And actually, now that I'm on the other side, I'm like, oh my gosh, Caroline, you had a baby at a home? Are you out of your mind? Like, of course, I'm so grateful I did. It was the coolest experience ever. But there's a part of me that's like, whoa. Yeah. So I've been getting a lot of DMs when I talk about this on Instagram. People are like, do you think I should do it? I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is the most personal decision ever. And nobody should be trying to advocate for anybody else's birth experience. That's got to come from number one. Okay. So let's start from the beginning. I had no intentions of doing a home birth. Like I said, I was going to a traditional hospital with traditional OBs up until about 28, 30 weeks of pregnancy. So that's like almost the whole way. And actually, the hospital that I was going to had a midwife kind of department. So you could opt into the midwife side of the like labor and delivery ward. And that was if you were low risk and met certain criteria, you could do that. And so immediately when I heard that, I was like, oh, heck yeah, this is going to be the best of both worlds. I'm going to get the kind of midwife home birth experience at the hospital. I'm going to feel safe. I'm going to feel supported. And it's going to be crunchy, and I'll probably get to have a water birth and all the things that I wanted. So I was really, really excited about that. My first visit, we met with one of the OBs. And then after that, every visit, we met with a different midwife there. And there's a whole bunch. And so you never know who's going to be on call when when you're in labor. So I wanted to meet everybody. So I would say our first couple of visits there were pretty nice, pretty good. Everything's so like in the beginning of pregnancy, just feels like no one's pressuring you to do anything. None of the questions, you know, that you're going to have to face months later, feel that real yet. You don't have to get a plan together. You don't need to like know a bunch of terms yet. Most people don't even have a sense of their birth plan or, you know, all that. It's just loosey goosey. And it's just like, oh, you do your ultrasound, you get to see your baby. You figure out the gender if you want to know that, you know, you do the prenatal testing, all that stuff. And it's just kind of all that special magical stuff. And I really felt great about the hospital at that point. And Justin, he came with me to all the appointments, and he felt pretty darn good too. That is until I would say right around halfway through. Now, from the beginning, I was a little bit of, I would say, like a problem patient. Not, I don't know. I think I'm a very like reasonable person. And actually, my hospital notes, which I later got, where your provider like writes things up and with the understanding that you're not ever going to see them, actually wrote wants a natural birth with no pain medicine, but is reasonable. So anyway, they think I'm reasonable. I think I'm reasonable. When I say that I was a problem patient, it was more just like, I thought there were a lot of appointments and I didn't want to go to all of them. So from the beginning, I got this handout and it was like, here's your appointment schedule. And it was something like starting from 10 weeks or, you know, something. And then it's just constant. You know, the first kind of interval of visits are a little more spread out. And then it's like every 2 weeks and then every week. And, you know, we had an insurance plan at the time that covered some stuff, not a lot of stuff. But that really wasn't the thing. I wasn't really not wanting to go to every appointment based on the copay situation. It wasn't really that. It was like, you know, it's an hour away. We live rurally. I want Justin to come to these appointments. And so for both of us to be free or to leave what we're doing at the same time. And it ends up being like half a day by the time you drive down there, have the appointment, drive home. It just eats up a lot of time. And if all my vitals were good and we were having, you know, as I was told, we were having a low risk normal pregnancy, I just didn't see why I needed to be in there all the time. So I started to get pushback about that, but that's fine. That's their job. But something that was interesting to me was things were never phrased to me like they were an option. It was always like, this is the schedule and you have to do it. And I found myself having to remind myself early on, like, I'm paying them. Well, I'm sort of paying them. The insurance company's paying them, but whatever. I'm paying them. They work for me. Like, if I don't want to come as often to every single appointment that they say, I don't have to. Like, they're not the boss of me. So I had to remind myself that. You know, I'd get to the appointment, and as we got kind of to the middle of pregnancy, I'd be told, like, all right, jump up on the table here. We're going to do a vaginal exam. And I would say, oh, like, what for? And they, you know, they would tell me and I would go like, oh, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to do one. I'll decline that. And they would act like, oh, you know, my goodness, we've never had anybody decline a vaginal exam. But I just was getting the sense that things were being done very much according to like checking a box, not based on whether I needed these things or not. I would say my frustration started to come to a head around the time when I needed to be tested for gestational diabetes. So gestational diabetes, as we talked a lot about in the episode with Lily Nichols, that's where you can get temporary, most of the time temporary, diabetes when you're pregnant. Some people get it. It's very common. And you do a blood sugar test in the hospital to assess whether you have it or not. And they really want to know that because if you have gestational diabetes, your baby is at risk of being a little bigger, growing a little faster, I believe, in utero and needing more assistance on their way out. So it's just a good thing to know. But there's a lot of different ways to test for gestational diabetes. So you can do the hospital test. There's a Glucola drink that they have you drink. There's some other methods, things that you drink or eat. And then there's the method that I wanted to do, which was an at-home blood sugar monitor. So you can basically, for like $40, you can get the at-home blood sugar testing kit and like all the accessories that go with it. And then for a week or however long your provider says, you check your blood sugar. I think it's like four times a day. So it's you check in the morning on a fasting stomach and then 2 hours after each meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So when it came time to do that test, I let them know I was going to do at-home monitoring. And the reason being for that, I don't have an issue with the Glucola drink. Now, a lot of people in the crunchy home birth scene do. I don't. I just, first of all, I knew I was going to be like billed extravagantly for it, and I didn't want to do that. But secondly, I was like, I actually want to see what my blood sugar spikes in response to. Like, I've never done this. I'm really curious. I think having like a 7 day, you know, four snapshots a day, that's really going to give me a lot of information. I'm just curious. I just want to do that. And so when I said that I was going to do that, it was a little bit like some eye rolls. The feeling was from the providers like, yeah, yeah, a little bit of frustration, but I did it. And I was fascinated by my results. I was really pleased with my blood sugar. It was a lot more stable than I thought. And I could really tell that when I ate the things that make my body feel good, surprise, surprise, or no surprise, my blood sugar really didn't spike. But when I remember my biggest spike of the whole week was when I had a hot chocolate one afternoon. It spiked my blood sugar like crazy. Now that I still love hot chocolate, like no issue there, but it really was stark to see it. And it just helped me understand, okay, if I, you know, feel like I'm crashing at a certain point, maybe it's some of these carbohydrates that I've consumed or sugars. So anyway, I come in for my next appointment. I've got I think it was like a file on my phone of like a picture on my phone of my results or something. And I said to the provider, okay, I have those glucose, you know, at-home monitoring results. Would you like to see them? And she said, no, just upload them to your file. It's fine. And that gave me pause because this test like had been billed to me as like the most important thing ever. And they had to do it in the hospital. And it was, you know, I was crazy to do it at home because blah, blah, blah. They really had to have the information. But now when I actually had the information, my provider didn't want to look at it. And that was just weird to me. It really told me that provider, at least in that instance, desired more that I just check the boxes and do things as they're always done than actually care for my health. That's how it felt to me at the time. And Justin was in the room for these and he was like, you know, this is really weird. There was one more kind of last straw for me, although I would say that I really was, even with all the frustrations, I really still was like, I'm going to give birth here. I still felt safer in the hospital than anywhere else. I felt like I could advocate for myself and I was not afraid to do so. And so all these little frustrations were basically like annoyances, not that serious. But then we were getting deeper into winter. I had an appointment and we talked about testing for group B strep. So if you've been pregnant, you know, group B strep is, it's like a bacteria, I believe, that kind of lives in your digestive system. And it's very common. I think it's like 30% of women test positive for it. And if you're positive for it, there's a very slim, but real chance that bacteria could be passed to your baby during delivery, and then the baby could become sick. Now, the bacteria, if you're positive for it as the mother, it doesn't make you sick. It just lives there. But anyway, it can make the baby sick. So I didn't know anything about it. My provider said, okay, we're going to do your group B strep test. Jump up on the table. And I was like, oh, what is that? You know, can you explain more? So they're telling me more about it. And I asked, you know, what do we do if I'm positive? And the provider said, well, if you're positive for group B strep, it's the hospital's policy that upon admission, when you come in, when you're in labor, we will start you on a course of IV antibiotics. And you will get a course, like a fresh course, I guess, every 4 hours during your labor. And I just was like, whoa. Is that mandatory? Like, can we talk about it? And they were like, that's the policy. That's what we do. And of course, everything is always portrayed like, or we'll arrest you, you know, if you don't do it like this. There's never any like, well, it's our recommendation, but ultimately, like, as the patient, the one, you know, paying for care here, like, ultimately you decide what we do and don't do. No. They're never going to tell you that. It's like, you do this or you're a bad mom and you go to prison and we're going to take your kid away from you. That was the subtext of how my provider acted the minute I started asking any follow-up questions about this group B strep situation. So I asked if I could just bump the test to the next appointment, like, let me, you know, go home, do a little reading about it, understand more, and then come back. And the provider said, with a kind of a snarky tone, she said, gave me a website to look it up and to see some of the studies about it. And basically was like, you can go do the reading yourself and then you'll see why we recommend this. It was definitely like had a tone. I'm like, okay, I will, you know. So I went home. I went to the website that she recommended and a whole bunch of others. And I read basically like the overviews of the studies about group B strep. And I learned a couple things. So I said before that group B strep transmission, sickness, getting the baby getting sick from the mother being positive in group B strep, it is a very small but very real risk. So I'm not trying to minimize this can happen. But what I will say is I believe when I looked it up in the study, the mortality rate was like 0.0001 or 0.00001. It was really, really small. Now, of course, that's, you know, the one is 100% to somebody. So I'm not saying like it never happens. Please hear me. Okay. But the next thing that I read in the study that really surprised me was, okay, so while group B strep is the leading cause of infection for newborn babies, the second leading cause of infection is, at least according to the study that I read, is transmission just from being in the hospital. So picking up some kind of sickness from the hospital and getting an infection and getting sepsis. So that gave me pause too. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. If we're doing all this to mitigate group B strep, but we're not talking about the fact that you can get very sick just from being in the hospital, like, whoa, I just felt like I wasn't being told the whole story. And then I started reading about group B strep, about how it's actually something that you can get rid of on your own. So if you test positive, a lot of people are able to go home, have some probiotics, eat some yogurt, do some stuff, and they come back and they can test negative. And so I was a little frustrated of like, well, if I test positive, then I'm automatically going to be put on these rounds of antibiotics. My baby is going to be born. As is my understanding, I could be wrong about this, but like if I'm on antibiotics, that, you know, I'm making colostrum for this baby. So that is going to be in some way subtle or large, it's going to be impacting this baby. And I am super, this is going to be like the dumbest thing I've ever said. But I'm super proud of my microbiome. Like, I don't get sick. I don't like react to food. I don't have any kind of like digestive issues. My husband and I never got COVID. I mean, maybe I did, but like I didn't have any symptoms despite being exposed like a bajillion times. We barely get colds. All that to say is I really feel like being on the farm and like living kind of the lifestyle that we do has given me a microbiome that is really healthy right now. It has not always been the case. I was a very sick child. I got every cold and illness and a little bit of food poisoning. My tummy always hurt. Like I was just a sickly kid, and I'm not anymore. And I haven't been on antibiotics in years. I can't remember the last time, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And so to me, all of that matters when you're, you know, doing skin to skin with a newborn, you're transferring your microbiome to them. You're making colostrum and breast milk. This is their passive immunity that they're getting. It's like their start in the world. And so to me, being put on a course of antibiotics was like no small order. Like I really, really didn't like it. And I really wanted to make sure that any, you know, it was worth it. We're going to evaluate all the pros and cons. And what I was reading in this group B strep studies was like, I just didn't feel that in my case, there was enough risk to warrant being put on the antibiotics. And I got the sense that if you like try to refuse them, I don't know, maybe they decline to allow you to give birth there. I don't know. Like it's a very strict hospital policy. Now, there were some other issues that I had, whereas like if you're just a pregnant lady and you never get tested for group B strep and you deliver your baby, you just show up to a hospital like, ding dong, I'm here to have a baby. They don't test you for group B strep and start you on antibiotics right then. They let you have your baby. So it's not this thing where it's like such an urgent thing that they're starting everybody, you know, who even might be positive on antibiotics. Lots of people never get tested. And also I believe in Europe, they don't test for group B strep at all. Like it's not like a universal global thing. And yeah, I just was frustrated that my doctor had not mentioned that there was things you could do to test negative. If you tested positive prior, you could get tested again, and then you don't need the antibiotics. Like that was never conveyed to me. So I started leaving my appointments with like just a pit in my stomach. I really had thought that the midwives at the hospital, it was going to be this like warm and fuzzy experience. I even asked like, oh, can we see like a room, an example of a room where we might give birth? No, but you can have a virtual tour. And then I tried to do the virtual tour and it like wasn't even that. It was like like a generic stock photo of a hospital room. Like it was just, it felt like so industrialized. It felt like, I do not need to be treated like a special snowflake when I walk in, like for healthcare. I don't need to be coddled, but the feeling was like you were not an individual, like you were there for boxes to be checked. Like, for example, I was given a handout where I could check, you know, my mood on like a scale of 1 to 10 from like suicidal to euphoric, you know, how's my mood been? But then you fill all that out, and then in the actual room itself, I felt like nobody was even looking me in the eye and being like, how are you? Like, what's going on? You know, there was one more thing that really frustrated me. This was pretty early on. I think it was maybe right at the beginning of my second trimester. The provider that I met with said that they recommended or insisted, basically, nothing's a recommendation, everything's like mandatory, that I get a blood test for anemia. I said, okay, great. Or just, it was like actually a regular blood panel. One of the things they were looking for was iron levels to see if I was anemic, but they were also looking at a bunch of other blood stuff. I don't know what it was. So I did the test and everything came back great. 6-8 weeks go by and they asked me to get another blood test. Now, my first blood test was pretty expensive. I want to say it was like $400 or $500. Again, we had insurance issues and everything looked normal. And with the second blood test, they wanted to make sure that I still wasn't anemic. And at this point, I was like, listen, that was an expensive test. I eat a lot of red meat and spinach and all the things that give you iron. And I also don't have any symptoms of anemia. So I know what they are. You know, it's fatigue, the desire to chew ice, things like that. I have no history. Like my mom never got anemic, still has not. I know my mom is turning 70. She has never had anemia. It's just not something that runs my family. And I was like, I'm pretty confident that based on how I feel, which is effing fabulous, like to be honest, I barely felt better in my life than when I was pregnant. I felt incredible. I just didn't feel that the test was necessary. And that was met with a ton of resistance and the same kind of subtext of like, I'm this huge problem. I don't know what's good for me. I'm unreasonable. I'm endangering my baby. Now, fast forward to when I ended up transferring to a midwife outside the hospital much, much, much later in my pregnancy, like a couple weeks out from actually delivering. She asked me to do another blood draw so that she could confirm all these things and then also look at my iron levels. And guess what? They were great. They were fine. But I was happy to do it because she explained to me at the time that right at the end of pregnancy, babies can take a lot of your iron. And it's not uncommon to become anemic very suddenly. And there were also things that she wanted to independently look at that were not, you know, checked in my first blood test. So the reason I say that is, number one, okay, I was right. I knew I wasn't anemic. Number two, I am a reasonable person who will get a blood test and pay the fees if it's asked by a provider if they just give me a good reason that makes sense to my brain. I am happy to do it. But this provider, it just felt like that was not the case. And there was one last, I keep saying like one more thing, but things keep like my brain, they keep jogging my memory of things that upset me while I was in there. Another earlier appointment, I expressed that I would like to have a natural birth or shoot for a natural birth, aim for one without pain meds. And the provider kind of laughed and said, oh yeah, everybody says that. And I'm sure everybody does say that. I bet it gets so old to have all these crunchy or crunchy adjacent gals come in, say the same thing, fight you on the same stuff, and then come in and do what you ask them to do. Or they say, you know what, give me the epidural. And there is nothing wrong with that. I bet as a provider, it gets so old to listen to what people think they want. And then in the moment, they want something different. And you have a pretty good guess of how things are going to go. So that said, this is like the only time I've ever been pregnant or, you know, had a baby. Like I'm allowed to hope for the kind of delivery that I wanted and to be almost laughed at, certainly scoffed at. It was like the most unsettling feeling. I even said, I made like a joke to try and minimize it. Of like, I know that, you know, lots of things can go wrong. Like I'm a shepherd. I understand that, you know, even with animals, delivery isn't always smooth. And I studied anthropology. I know that female anatomy, or human anatomy rather, has its challenges with delivering babies, but I trust my body. And again, it was like, yeah. So all this stuff was just building up. And I was just feeling really at wit's end. And there was something else that I was feeling, which was absolute certainty that my baby was healthy and would be brought into this world smoothly. How could I know that? How could that be something that I felt? I don't know. I felt that from the pregnancy test. So I took the pregnancy test. My first feeling was like, oh, beep. Like I was not excited to see the result, to be honest. And my second feeling was, this baby is a thriver. And what that meant to me was that I could eat Cheetos for the next 9 months. I could treat my body like a garbage can. This baby was a thriver. I don't know how else to put it. I've never felt a feeling like this. It was like there was nothing I could do. This baby was coming out, and he, as we later learned, he was going to be strong and thrive. And I felt that clarity the entire pregnancy. Of course, I tried very hard to eat well and do all the right things, but I knew in my bones that everything was going to be okay. So it was, I think, like mid-December, I had my checkup at the hospital, and they asked me to schedule my next appointment. And at that point, it was like when you're supposed to start coming more frequently. And I just, you know, every appointment was like 7 minutes. You know, you take your whole half day off of work, rearrange everybody's schedules, bring your husband in there. And he didn't have to come, but I wanted him to come, and he wanted to come. And I felt like, selfishly, I kind of felt like if I'm doing these, I just wanted him to come too. Like I wanted him to be as inconvenienced by these appointments as I was, and also be there to like ask any questions or, you know, advocate and help wrap his mind around labor and delivery, just like I was trying to wrap my mind around it. So I was there, and it was time to schedule the next appointment. And they were like, okay, we're going to start seeing you weekly now, or whatever it was. And I just said, oh, well, you know, it's the holidays and the new year. So like, I'll just come back in, you know, January 10th or something. And they were like, well, no, we're going to want to see you. You know, and they said like December 28th, or I don't know what they said. And I just, it was like I was being scolded and scoffed at in the scheduling department. Like I had no autonomy to decide when I was going to come in and schedule the appointment. And I think at that point I just said, you know what, I'll call you and schedule it. Holidays are so crazy, you know, who knows? And I walked out of there and I just knew I was not going back. I was never going back there. Whether I was going to have this baby in the woods, I was never going back there. Which then begs the question, okay, well, what are you going to do then? Because at this point I was still not interested in a home birth. Was I going to look at other hospitals? Was I going to do something different, a little bit outside the traditional medical system? I had no idea. And I also really felt that what was supposed to happen would emerge, and it would be easy, and it would feel right, and it would feel really different than the experience I was having at the hospital. So I was ruminating about what to do. I'd heard some friends have positive experiences at other hospitals in the area. I thought about going to some of them, and I just was like, I just couldn't make the appointment. I couldn't get motivated, because I really feel that my issues fundamentally, yes, they were with the very specific care that I received at that very specific place. I'm not trying to draw any broad assumptions about the medical system in general or obstetric care in general. I'm just saying my specific experience. But I also had heard from enough friends that at other hospitals in the area, it was like same, same, but different. You got kind of the same treatment and was the same basically outlook. And I just felt exhausted at the idea of trying out different hospitals to try to find the culture that I was looking for, which I'm sure there's amazing providers right near me, but to try to find them, it felt like a needle in a haystack, and I was just tired. I just didn't want to. And then a friend of mine mentioned that she has another friend who is a doula and that she recommended that we get together. And I didn't even hardly know what a doula was at the time. I looked it up. Doulas are there to support the laboring mother. So basically, midwives are there for, kind of for the mother too, but definitely for the baby. And doulas are there for the mother. So we met up and our doula, she ended up being our doula. Her name is Morgan. And I felt like, ooh, a little sparkle around that, because that was the name that we were considering. It was the only name that we both liked and were strongly considering for our son. And I'm always kind of looking for little like glimmers that might suggest that I'm on the right path. Little God winks, whatever you want to call them. So we met up, we had a walk. It was really nice. We met up again. We had a cup of tea. It was really nice. I felt like we could talk for hours. And in terms of just outlook and beliefs and advocating for women and the type of labor that I wanted to have, we just felt super aligned on everything. And finally, I asked Morgan, the doula, like, oh, would you be our doula? I said, I don't know if I'm going to have a home birth. I don't know where we're going to do this. I might be in the hospital. Are you willing to do that? Because at that point, she had primarily been working at home births. And so it would have been a new experience for her to be a doula at the hospital. And she was so lovely. And she said, yep, I'll be your doula. I think she said, like, if you want to, wherever you want to have this baby, I'll be your doula. If you want to have this baby, like on Mars, I'll be your doula. And it just, I felt like, okay, something clicked into place. We have a piece that is going to be really important. And it's not just me going to be advocating for what I want. Because I didn't want Justin or I to be in the position to have to essentially be like a referee at our own birth of like, please stop asking about an epidural. We've expressed that we don't want it and we'll ask for it if we want it, that kind of thing. Like, I didn't want to have the labor experience disrupted by having to advocate for me or Justin. So having this supportive third party who's familiar with birth, familiar with all these processes, just felt great. Then I started looking into some birth centers because that just seemed like a perfect happy medium. We are rural. We live about an hour away from all these hospitals. The birth centers are right near the hospitals. They had great reviews when I looked them up. It seems like a beautiful way to have that more homey style delivery. And so I made an appointment to take a tour. And then like some freak weather event happened, like a freak storm that wasn't on the forecast. And then we rescheduled. And then they had some freak event, and then they canceled. And then I rescheduled. And then the third time that I was supposed to tour the birth center, something else happened, like the cows got out or whatever it was, I don't remember, and we couldn't go. And I said, okay, universe. It's not there. We're not having the baby there. And I know that's crazy that I just live my life by vibes and looking for signs, but it felt like that was a sign, like, don't have your baby here. I knew that what we were supposed to be doing was going to be easy. So at that point, I asked our doula whether she knew of any midwives in the area. And she sent me an email with several names. And I started reaching out to people. Now, at this point, I cannot express. We were getting very, very, very close to having this baby. Like, very close. And so one of the midwives that I reached out to had availability. The others, I was not able to get in touch with. And the midwife that had availability, she had like literally a 2-week opening in her schedule right around my due date. And then other than that is booked solid, like for the next foreseeable future. So it was just one of those like freak things where she was like, okay, yeah, you can come in. Let's meet and talk about maybe bringing you on. I don't usually have an opening this close, but we can talk. So we go in there and I just loved her. I loved it all. It was like, there were jars of herbs around. before she examined me, she asked permission to touch me, and then she asked permission to touch the baby. She explained everything she was doing. You know, when she listened to the heart rate, then she put the stethoscope on me so that I could hear the heart rate, and she explained what we were listening for. She also explained, yeah, we're going to, you know, I'm going to have you do the group B strep test. And if you test positive, I'm going to help you get your probiotics going, and we're going to test again, and we'll get you to where you can test negative, and then we don't have to worry about it. Like, everything that she was doing was so similar to what was happening in the hospital in terms of like tests and exams, but it was framed so differently. And it was, everything was up to me and so well explained that I just felt it was a completely different experience. At one point, I asked her about, you know, how do things usually work with your patients? And she stopped me and she said, I don't have patients. I have clients. And I don't know why that hit me, but it just, it struck me that I was really at a different paradigm at this point. Now, this midwife is a home birth midwife, but I know this is crazy. We were having appointments with her and we were still not set that we were going to have a home birth. I still had all, the hospital still had all my stuff. And the way that the billing worked with the midwife was that, you know, if you ultimately decide not to deliver with her at home, you just pay for the visits that you had. And like, that's okay, basically. So I felt like even if, you know, the last 2 months of my pregnancy are out of the hospital and I end up delivering at the hospital, I still feel so empowered and great about everything that's going on. And Justin was really not into the home birth idea. And I also, at that time still, I was getting home birth curious, I'll say that. But I wasn't going to do it if he wasn't all in, and he was not all in. He had a lot of safety concerns. And yeah, we were still looking for some kind of happy medium. And time went on, and I really began to feel differently. A couple things happened that just felt so synergistic. Number one, I did not want to previously deliver or have a baby in my house because I felt like we were in the middle of a construction zone for the last year, basically. We've been doing this big renovation, and I didn't feel like we had a place where I could relax enough to have a baby. And then right before my due date, a few weeks before, we finished the renovation. And it was everything I dreamed of. And there's this huge bathtub. And I just was like, I want to labor here. This, I can relax here. This feels right. The second thing was that my doula and midwife had this great relationship. They knew each other. They'd worked together before. That felt like tons of synergy around that. And then another thing that was happening was as our visits went on with the midwife, we were more and more and more comfortable with her expertise. She had a very reasonable, logical answer for every concerning question that we had about a home birth. Things like, well, what if we have to hospital transfer? And she explained, well, you know, because you are an hour away from a hospital, you're a little further away than she usually works with. Her threshold for transfer will be lower and will be sooner. So if anything gives her pause, you know, we transfer. The other thing that I really came to realize and remember, and I see this all the time with the sheep and the cattle, is that most emergencies do not come out of nowhere. Even though you may feel like things are such a huge emergency, most of the time, again, most of the time, someone's going to say like, well, what about a sudden hemorrhage? Yes, a sudden hemorrhage. But most of the time, emergencies have signs. So for example, like failure to dilate for a long time, your water breaking and not having any real progress, signs of meconium in the discharge. All these things are signs that there might be some kind of challenge or some more like medical assistance might be needed. I also knew that I was low risk, the baby was low risk, no risk basically. He was also scanning at like 25%, I believe, for size, which means that he was not a huge baby. Now, the scans are not perfectly accurate, of course, but that was also kind of the consensus of the midwife based on my belly size and her feeling the baby. Because you can feel the baby's head, you can feel the baby's butt, you can feel how big he is. I knew that he wasn't huge. I also have a lot of family history on both sides of natural births that have gone smoothly. So all this stuff was kind of adding together for me to feel pretty darn comfortable at the idea of a home birth. And eventually, Justin felt the same. Now, I did not pressure him at all. I think in my heart of hearts, I was like, please, please come around to this, because I felt like the birth that I was dreaming of had the potential to be so empowering and so special that I was worried that if he said no to a home birth out of fear, and that if I had to go to the hospital and I had a traumatizing birth, as let's face it, a lot of women do, and I've heard a lot of my friends have had really traumatizing births, I was just worried that I would resent him, and I was worried that I would feel like he had stolen this empowering opportunity from me. And we don't know if we're going to have more kids. We didn't know we were going to have this kid. So I may just deliver once. I may get one shot at it. And it felt really tragic, honestly, like felt sick to my stomach at the thought that I wouldn't have the opportunity to have the birth of my dreams. And I also felt like I didn't have a lot of ego in it, that yes, I was dreaming of this home birth, but it wasn't like I had to do it. And I felt like, okay, if I can't handle it, if things get too painful, I will happily transfer. I will be loading myself in the car. Like, I did not have pride attached to it. I didn't have this thing of like, I got to prove a bunch of people wrong about it. All these skeptical people that don't think home births, you know, are possible. I really didn't feel that way. And because of that, we were not telling people that we were considering a home birth. It just felt like you invite opinions, you invite judgment, you invite fear. When you're pregnant, people are already trying to tell you about their birth trauma, like at every opportunity, like, well, my baby almost died and this and that, and the pain was so unbearable and all this stuff. So we just didn't want to invite it. And I didn't want to have their judgment in my head if I decided to transfer at the last minute. And then it's a bunch of I told you so's. So yeah, that is how things started to converge around a home birth. One of my last checkups, we actually just had right in our home. I mean, I laid on my couch. The midwife checked the baby, listened to his heart rate. It was so relaxing. There was almost this feeling when you're that far outside the traditional medical system that you're like, okay, I know that I wanted this, but like, is everyone just letting me do this? Like, are we the adults in the room? I can't believe I just got like checked on my own sofa. Is this okay? It can feel briefly like disorienting if you've never been outside of the system like that. And then as we got close to labor, I just felt this like deep, deep confidence and peace around the birth. And actually, I had this wildly wonderful Reiki session. If you're not familiar with Reiki, it's basically like an energy work. It's you lay on a massage table with like calming music in the background, and you basically aren't even touched really. Sometimes you are, like your head or your feet, but the practitioner will just like hover their hands over you. And so a lot of people will say it's just placebo, in which case I say that's fine with me. Like, I have such enjoyable and actually like transformative Reiki sessions that if all I'm doing is paying someone to like watch me meditate and ensure that I meditate in peace for an hour, I still think it's worth it. So I had this incredible Reiki session right at the end of my pregnancy. And one of the takeaways that I had was in a feeling of just absolute incredible well-being around delivery. And I also got the message that I don't need to be strong. I don't need to tough it out. I need to surrender. So that was one of the post-it notes that I put next to my bathtub. One said surrender, one said I love you, Morgan, and then I had two that said I am not afraid, I was born to do this. And I would just look at them every night when I had my bath, and I would just think, I am not afraid, I am born to do this, surrender, and I love you, Morgan. I thought, you know, those four phrases I think can get me through almost anything.